Welcome to the Chromeris Radio Podcast. I'm Terry Schubring, and with me I have Paul Berglund and Darwin Gross. Thanks so much for coming. This is our first meetup podcast. We just played some ambient music and improvised some, some pretty guitar-heavy stuff. That was good. Darwin, you need to run first, so I'll quiz you first. Can you give me a little bit of background on the tools you're using to make music?
Sure. So I have a really long history of doing stuff with analog systems, as well as digital systems. But lately, I've been trying to get a lot more mobile and a lot more battery powered. And so while I normally perform with a pretty with an interesting little modular analog rig, tonight I actually chose to use two digital pieces. The first one is the Akai MPC Live. It's the most recent version of the Akai MPC series. It's kind of cool because it has a really nice, it has a really nice user interface for doing some kind of detailed sampling, especially multi-sampling, and it's got a lot of memory, so I can work with really long form stuff. So I had, I basically created a bunch of pads specifically for tonight by recording some guitar and then using the Paul stretch algorithms to stretch them out to extreme lengths, and then to select little segments out of them that I found interesting, and I would assign them to a pad, and then I could just hit a pad and it would just sort of like generate a thing in the background. And by choosing which pads I would play, I would get different overlays that would imply different chords. So that was the main thing. The other thing I was playing was something that's brand new to me. I just got it about a week and a half ago. Which is the Yamaha Reface DX. It's a little four-operator FM box that Yamaha came out with about, I'm guessing, 2 years ago. And when they came out, they were $699, and everybody was like, ah, we're not going to spend that much money on a little tiny mini keyboard, right? So they kept on dropping the price, and when the price hit $299, I was like, I'm buying. So I got that, and I basically... You know, it comes with a whole bunch of stuff that kind of sounds like standard Yamaha DX stuff, and I just dumped all that, and I just developed my own patches.
So it's equivalent to like a DX100 in its architecture?
Roughly, although it doesn't have the crunchy output section that the DX100 has. It's pretty clean, so it's sort of like if you combined a... It's almost like a TX81Z or something, in that it has some interesting waveform tweaks and stuff, but... It's got nice built-in effects, and it's battery-powered. Everything I brought tonight is battery-powered, which has become a really important thing for me because I'm finding myself wanting to be strapped to the studio less and less. And so with battery-powered stuff, I can go sit in the backyard and work on drum patterns, or I can take, if we're going to the store, my wife can drive, and I can be, like, making DX patches, you know, while we drive. So it's a really interesting, different way to work, and one that actually really kind of aligns with what I'm kind of into right now.
Yeah, I used to have a lot of SK5s and, little workstations and stuff, the PSS-480 I mentioned before. I had a great time. My friend had a DX7, and I had these Lexicon MRC units, and had some pages that would... Its control surfaces were kind of a rare thing, and so the DX was like this really powerful synth that could do all this crazy stuff, but it was super hard to program and understand.
Yeah.
But then once we got that thing going with the the Oberheim arpeggiator and the MRC, so we could do the envelopes and the polymod, frequency and feedback, as they call it in DX
FM world,
land.
Yeah,
I was more of a CZ guy. But once we got the control surface and the feedback on the arpeggiator, that thing, we were making whale sounds and aliens. It was just amazing. We were just hypnotized by it, and we had to barely touch it, and it would just evolve away. It was the most amazing.
Yeah, combo. Well, doing FM programming, I mean, I have a long background doing doing sort of more standard subtractive synthesis. And I kind of got my bones in the whole music industry by when the Kurzweil K2000 first came out. It was also when the internet was first starting to be a thing. And so I wrote these set of tutorials for people.
Is that
people.
The virtual analog or the great sounding piano? Which one is that?
It was after the piano. It was their first sort of like workstation.
Oh, thing, okay. Right?
So it was like 16 channels of stuff. But it had a really strong, it had this programming engine called the VAST system. And it was really, you could use kind of like classic programming techniques, classic synth programming techniques, but most people would never crack it. They would just like click through presets like most people did with synths at the time. So what I did was I actually just started this weekly thing where I would, my wife was in Japan at the time. And so I had a lot of time on my hands. And so every week I would post up a little article about here's another thing to do to continue the path of learning to program the Kurzweil K2000. And I didn't know if anybody was reading it. And there was a little Kurzweil K2000 mailing list, which is the way that people kept in touch at the time. And people started responding more and more and more. And it was pretty incredible. But then kind of ran into some financial difficulties. And that was when the first time I really saw the power of the internet. I ran into some financial difficulties. I had to sell my Kurzweil K2000. So I had to write the note to everyone. It was like, hey, I can't do this anymore. And the people on the mailing list just decided to put together funds. And they were just like, send Darwin a check if you can send him a check. And I started getting $50 checks like crazy. Nice. And I was like, I assumed there were like 10 people on the internet, right? You know? And I was getting checks from all over the world. And it was enough to allow me to get a Kurzweil K2000, which I've kept all this time. It's been an amazing, amazing part of my history. I just recently passed it on to someone who's just starting to learn synthesis. And so I was like, well, it's time to like grant this out to somebody. But it was a really interesting thing. That was kind of how I got started. Because of that, I started writing for Recording Magazine, which is based out of Boulder. I've been writing for them. I've done about 150 articles with them. I started writing initially, writing manuals initially. I did a bunch of manuals for Native Instruments. And then because of that work, I got an opportunity to talk to the people at Cycling 74, which are the people that make the Mac software, which I started working with them in the year 2000. I'm still cracking away at it. So that's cool. My story. It's a big story.
And the Kurzweil that was famous for having the most realistic piano.
Yeah, yeah,
because
that
of
was
the way they
right.
did multi-filtering of the cross fades.
It was basically what their trick was making these really complicated multi-sample maps and making it so that the transitions from one map to the next was kind of smooth.
Continuously fades from one to the next.
Because before that, people were like, yeah, okay, well, the low octave needs to be sampled different than the high octave. But a lot of people weren't thinking about separate recordings for velocities and stuff like that. And so they kind of were the first people to come up with this matrix style of sample recording. And it was pretty impressive in comparison to everything else at the time.
I'm really excited about what is the name of the digitally controlled piano? It's
the Disclavier?
Yeah, that one.
The Disclavier?
Now you can't beat the real thing.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, if you got room for it. Not battery powered.
Do you need a special keyboard to program it? Is it because it's not 128 steps of velocity like a normal keyboard, is it?
They do some tricks with velocity on that thing in order to... So there's a lot of ways you can, in the MIDI spec, just using the standard MIDI spec, there's a lot of things you can do to sort of like add additional levels of complexity if you choose to, right? And I know that the Disclavier certainly does some of that in order to make it so that it's able to be a lot more sensitive. So able to deal with like releasing, you know, how you release a key and stuff like that. It has the kind of MIDI that a Disclavier puts out is a lot more detailed than you would get from your standard M-Audio plastic key set, right?
But yeah, then But you could, if you had a MIDI file, you could get the probably the best sound if you sent it to somebody who had a Disclavier.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So what's good is it's good to have friends at universities because it seems like a lot of universities have Disclaviers. So I'm lucky enough to have some friends. In fact, a friend of mine just recently, he had made a piece that was actually a piece made for four Disclaviers playing simultaneously. And it was interesting because at the time he was like trying to push the envelope. So they were all four of them like playing as fast and as many notes as was kind of feasible at the time. And it was an incredible blur of noise. But at the same time, for me, it's like my favorite, I think my favorite Disclavier sound is just like a middle C hit and then just letting it ring for a long time. You know?
What do you think of the Omnisphere software?
I haven't used it a lot, mainly because, so I work in a, this is going to be a little bit of a confession, but I'll go ahead and make the confession anyway. So I work in the music industry, plus I write for a music magazine, plus I go to a lot of trade shows and stuff. So generally speaking, I don't often use software that I don't get for free or in some way, you know, sort of like work off with sweat equity, right?
And that's just like tens of gigabytes too.
Yeah, it's ridiculous amount of stuff. Yeah, so I just haven't used it because Rob Pappen just doesn't have a tendency to want to trade with people, and so as great as it is, and everybody I know sort of like swears by it, but it's funny. For me the problem I have with a lot of software that's out right now is that it's really preset filled, right? And so, like, I really love Native Instruments Complete, as an example. But the problem is, you could literally spend your whole lifetime starting with preset A, and hopefully before you die, you might get through preset Z, right? But maybe not. You might not make it. So instead, what I tend to like a lot is getting something, and the Kontakt Synth Engine is a great, great synth engine for this. Get something, record some noise, and then play around with it and come with something unique. Because like tonight, the stuff we were playing, because it was based off of my guitar playing and my processing and stuff like that, I'm pretty damn confident nobody else in the whole world's ever going to sound like that, right? At least not in that particular way.
Yeah, and I like the generative approach to it, where it's like you're guiding it, but it's, you know, it's...
It has a kind of life of its own also, right?
Well, you know, that it's there's a funny element to that in making music in a band, where you have an idea in your head, in your imagination, then you communicate it, you have a strategy to communicate it, and then ultimately what comes out of the speaker is going to be something else.
Right.
You know, no matter how hard you try,
right.
There's always that element, the creative element of the miscommunication or the just the way people understand music, that you're always going to get a different result. What was so cool about the FM synthesis was that there's no way to really plan your sound. You just had to kind of grab it and whack it, and what came out the other end is...
Yeah, there's kind of happy surprises a lot with FM synthesis.
It defies
right?
analysis.
It does. Now, the other thing, though, that's interesting is talking about the generative systems. One of the things I feel like is, in a way... I do a lot of solo work, and I do a lot of small ensemble work. But in doing solo work, one of the things I feel like is because I do my own patches and I write my own programs and stuff like that, I a lot of times feel like I'm collaborating with myself from a different time, right? So like these pads that I did, I actually worked on them yesterday and today. And so I sort of feel like I'm collaborating with myself just before I had those waffles and that fresh sweet corn that I had with my kids. You know, it's like I was a different person before I had that sweet corn. And so now I get to collaborate with a different version of me. But like when I'm working,
blood sugar.
Right. Like when I'm working with some of the programs that I write in Max, for example, or some of the generative systems I create with my modular system, then it's sort of like, I a lot of times have trouble when I'm artistic me, trying to cope with technical me. And sometimes it's really easy for artistic me to just jump into technical stuff and do technical stuff and then just leave artistic guy behind, right? And conversely, if I'm technical guy it's really hard for me to like drop the technical and become an artist again, right? And so in a way, sometimes I feel like doing generative systems or doing this kind of setup allows the artist version of me to collaborate with the technical version of me without having to right now be the technical guy, right? And so that's just kind of an interesting way for me to kind of honor both sides of my nature.
Darwin, do you need to run right now?
Pretty quick, yeah.
Okay, well, thank you so much. You're here for the first jam of the St. Paul Ambient Meetup.
Nice, great.
And I'm going to put some of this into the Chromeris system, and I'll send you a link to the hour.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, the player caches every hour. So every hour it looks back at WordPress and says what happened in the last hour okay. and the last 3 hours.
All right,
so if the last hour has a lot of activity, it'll fill up the feed. And so every hour you'll hear what people did in the last hour.
Interesting.
And then it'll backfill from the last 3 hours. And then it'll just, if there's nothing going on recently, it'll just pull from the history and
cool.
create a random hour. But everyone nice. Will get the same random hour. So oh, it's essentially going to be synchronous across the world. But it's not really broadcasting a stream. It's just kind of broadcasting RSS.
Yeah, I'm anxious to see this in action. It seems like a really kind of powerful thing that you've put together. And it sounds like the opportunity for some happy surprises, too, which I'm always a fan of.
Oh, it's really meant for people who maybe they don't, they're it's kind of daunting to put together a song or an album or a band, right? But a loop, you can do that. That's manageable. You could do that and then be on the radio in the next hour.
Right.
So it sort of appeals to the instant gratification. And also with a loop, you don't have to judge it because you're not the final producer.
Right.
You know, Brian Eno said that the final stage of production happens in the room with the listener.
Yeah, and Brian Eno wore a boa made out of feathers, so he must have something going on, right?
Well, you know, I don't know if he is just a transmitter of ideas or if he's a receiver of ideas.
I don't know. The way he's able to tap into stuff, you really do have this sense that he's like the real time traveler, right? He's coming back from the future saying, well, everyone out there knows about this stuff, but let me whisper something in your ear. Right.
There's a guy, James Blake, who had a real spacey single.
Yeah.
Had Brian Eno all over it. It's amazing. It's like, yeah, top of the charts.
Nice.
Killing
so, it. So, hey, thanks a lot. I'm going to have you on my podcast. For anyone listening, it's Art Plus Music Plus Technology. It's available iTunes, Stitcher, and everywhere else that waste time on podcasts. And also make sure that your listeners maybe get a chance to check out the Mac software, which is a fun little thing to play with. And we were recently acquired by Ableton, so I'm obviously a pretty big fan of Ableton stuff. I always have been. I've been using their stuff since version one. It's amazing.
Well, it sounded great. I was kind of mystified as to what I was hearing sometimes. I thought, what is my delay screwed up? Is my guitar plugged in and someone kicked it? What happened? Oh, yeah. No, it sounded great, Darwin. Thanks so much for coming.
Right.
And
yeah.
I'm going to be doing this every week. So if you know anyone who you think would have fun or, you know, go ahead and RSVP and I'd love to have you back.
Sounds cool, man. Thanks a lot.
That was Darwin
nice
Gross.
Great meeting you, man.
Okay. All right.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, we're going to continue on and talk to Paul Berglund. So you improvised an extended piece, and it sounded pretty fantastic. You've got a good command of the inversions and the keys. You got it all down.
Thank you.
Very expressive too. I like the right. I like your composition.
Yeah.
So tell me your musical background.
I was a music major in college, piano major many, many years ago. I did not graduate. I wasn't into graduating or anything.
Where was that at?
University of Minnesota.
Okay.
I got into Indian music, which I still respect a great deal, but I'm not doing that at this point. It's the Indian drums, but I have then my what I love doing is writing piano music, and that's what I'm trying to do these days again. It's been a few years now I've been doing it again, and I want to. I mean, it's as simple that my very humble and simple stories. I want to create a very well produced, very good sounding piano album of my own music, and I have some of the music done now, or you know, basically done. And I feel very positive about it. I just want to get to where I actually do it in the kind of form I want it to be. In terms of this, I just found this a delightful, and I mean, I'm a different world for me showing up for this and listening, especially to you and Darwin. And the second thing, I don't know how much of that's going on in the podcast, but that it stretches out time in some way. And it's not, it is like it's, I'm not putting down my music at all, but I'm saying it's like it's in a box, you know, it's like in a box, and this is like stretched out into the jungle or the desert or something like that. That's really cool and really, really neat. If I at some point learn something more or better, you know, or expand my own understanding through that, that would be fantastic. You know, so I'm really glad I came, you know. So
I recommend anyone who wants to learn more about ambient music, there's mm-hmm. a great channel, Soma.fm.
Soma.fm.
All and right. They have a lot of different instrumental and ambient and noise and electronic experimental lounge. They have all these different feeds of different okay. genres. Cool. They have one called the Drone Zone, which is just fantastic. Yeah. If you're, I don't know if you have to type into a keyboard all day at work or anything.
Yeah, a lot.
Then it's really good to listen to because it'll.
Cool.
It listening to drones is just wonderful because it'll mask the noise and the surrounding, and it kind of your refrigerator becomes part of the composition instead of something distracting. Now, do you have a philosophy or a methodology related to composition with keys? Changing keys, or how much you change keys, or harmonic tension versus do you have a?
I don't have a conscious philosophy. What I do is notice. What I am noticing when I'm working on stuff is limitations in how the particular harmonies I go to, which up to a point I'm going to be perfectly fine with that. I mean, that's fine if I don't use certain dissonant chords or mix up my chord progressions. For example, I'm trying to learn some old, like 30s songs and stuff just to be able to play the piano, because I never really did it for people that way. And I'm noticing I'm not that good at harmony, and I'm noticing there's some amazingly cliched repetitive things on great old songs. In other words, there's these, it's almost like they're going to do just like a hymn will have that, a 5-1-5 suspension on almost every end of it. Some of these songs have, they'll go to the 2, a major 2, and they'll do the same thing. Some of these really great songs, and if you hear harmonies much easier, I wonder what it's like. Maybe most musicians can hear the chord progression when they just hear the song. And somehow that's always been more in my hands. But I don't even know if this is to the point at all, but it is actually my experience is I'm trying to look for what I do and expand that without it just being for no reason. Like some of the songs I've been working on, pieces I've been working on, the melody, and they are mostly melodic and harmonic songs. They aren't mood songs. I mean, they're I've been starting on the 5th for some reason. In other words, a lot of like 5 or 6 out of 8 or 9 songs, the primary melody has started on the 5, when I sure. wonder why is that? And I noticed there's a certain, even when I was playing tonight, I was thinking about the fact that I'm repeating chord progression. So my interest in my philosophy, in answer to your question, would just be to expand without, for no reason. In other words, I have zero interest in novelty for its own sake. In other words, and that's why I'm delighted to have heard this really, I was really impressed with the gig that you guys just did the thing you guys did.
Thank you.
And I wouldn't have just done. I certainly would have been polite, you know, by all means, but very nice. But and I don't know if this answers your question, because I don't have a philosophy with music. My philosophy would be expressing something that other people are moved by, and that it's good for them. You know, I mean, that they're not necessarily emotionally moved, but a lot of time, you know, but or aesthetically, emotionally moved, whether that's happy or sad or not, and basically positive. If it's sad, it would be that it's positive, not just getting you sad. And but then that it's and that it's accessible. But again, you know, accessibility is in the ear of the listener, because this might not have been accessible to me at some time in the past. And, you know, once again, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I almost went to sleep. I almost went into a trance, you know, so that was good. So I'm really impressed. I really think I have no idea what you're doing, because I don't know anything about this stuff, you know, unfortunately, technical stuff. It was fascinating listening to you and Darwin, because for some reason it doesn't come easy to me, but maybe I'll learn something over time. And terrific, you know.
Yeah, the piano is easy because the low notes are on the left, and you push the buttons and the sound comes out. It's pretty straightforward.
Yep.
Whereas, you know, with electronic music, it's anything goes, essentially. You know, there used to be some, you know, talk of analog versus digital, or, you know, the sound's cleaner or mm-hmm. higher fidelity, yep. more bits, but for now sure. that's all out the window. Nobody really
talks about
you,
that.
You yeah. can focus on what you want to focus yeah. on, and what comes out of the speakers is often, yeah. you know, out of your control, in a sense. And you try to set up a system that responds to what you're doing, but you can't push your intention through to get a planned result, in a sense. So you're still playing diatonic music into instruments, but
right.
there's this level of the way the effects, so, you know, there's time effects and gain and equalization mm-hmm. effects, and mm-hmm. those all can make the sound more natural, and then when you push it past that, it becomes unnatural. Then it starts to generate things that you never expected. And mm-hmm. then you can all of a sudden get have something novel that you didn't plan. And it's like a gift that the electronics give you. If you just massage them long enough, all of a sudden they start giving this music.
That's fascinating. Yeah, that's fascinating. And there was a sense, I'm not sure I can put it in words exactly, but a sense of something that was definitely creative and evocative and everything, not based on that, you know, on melody and harmony. I mean, even though there's melody and harmony, I mean, and it's, you know, it's ambient, I guess maybe that's part of what it means, and it's fascinating, and it stretches way out. Darwin was talking about, he created, what did he call it? Not patches, but loops. It was not loops either. It was something. What was the things he said that he'd start up and then
he took samples.
Stretched
them
stretch way out. Yeah. So and that's an interesting thing. And it is some. Not, I don't want to compare this to Indian music, but there's definitely similarities to the meditative quality of some.
It's not Indian telling music. A yeah. story with the beginning and middle and an end.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, but whereas and. Yeah, and maybe it is telling a story at some nonverbal level. That's not, you know, it may very well be, but was great. And I certainly would like to learn more about it. I don't know if my gifts are, but you know, in that realm, it almost seems like I'm in that, you know, write a little jig or something, or write a little song or something, but. I really appreciate it, and I like the expansive aspect of it.
Yeah, and I had a good time improvising with you. I think good. We had a few moments there yeah. where you know, some of the changes sounded like they were planned. You
yeah, know, there's a, yeah. You know, and that's something over time you'd get. That is a true pleasure. I remember when I used to, once in a while, jam a little bit with a friend of mine where we'd get it going. It was a long time ago, and it's a true pleasure. To when that happens.
And you know, I like to, you know, try to make the melody accentuate the if there's a key change. But when you're improvising, sometimes I want to be on a two or a five, and then wherever you go, you know, if you go left or right on the circle of fifths, I'm still going to be somewhere in there. And then the real joy is like, okay, I know what he did, so this is a half step, not a whole step for this melody now. So you can make it sound like it was written that way.
Yeah, but
that's
neat.
You can create it from whole cloth in real time and make an hour-long record in 1 hour.
Yeah, nice.
So, you know, that's something, because it could take 3 years for some people, or 10.
All right.
Well, it was really a pleasure.
Same here. Yeah, thank you.
Playing music with you, Paul. Thanks so much for coming. And go ahead and RSVP for another session this summer. And if you know anyone you think would have, you know, some thoughts about the, you know, the electronic system I'm working on, or is interested in experimental music, I'd be happy to meet any of your musical gang. So again, Paul Berglund, do you have a URL?
No.
You're promoting? Okay.
Not yet.
So,
no.
All right.
Thanks, though.
The piano record is in progress. Do you have a name for it?
Yeah, but I don't want to say it yet.
Dynamite. Okay, well, I'm looking forward to it, Paul. Thanks so much for the music.
All right.